Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Well, the dust is almost settled. During the November 6th midterm elections, hotly contested gubernatorial and U.S. congressional races, as well as local and regional issues like school referendums and marijuana legalization, spurred Wisconsin voters to the polls. The Associated Press reports the turnout was the highest for a midterm election ever in the state. The results of the election reflect deep divides in our region, state, and nation. Democratic candidate Tony Evers ousted Republican incumbent Scott Walker in the governor's race, but Republicans maintain majorities in both houses of the Wisconsin state legislature. On the national level, Democrats took control of the House of Representatives, while Republicans solidified their majority in the Senate. I'm Rick Ryer, in for Glenn Moberg. To help us sort this all out today on Route 51, we welcome reporters Emily Davies of WSAW News Channel 7, Molly Kowick of WAOW News 9, and Robert Menser of USA Today Network Wisconsin for a roundtable discussion and analysis of the November 6 elections. And we want to hear from you. What are the issues that motivated you to head to the polls? Call 800-780-9742. Again, that number is 1-800-780-9742. I'd like to quickly introduce our panel today. Emily Davies of WSAW News Channel 7. Emily is a full-time investigative reporter who joined the WSAW News team in October of 2013. She's part of the investigative team, 7 Investigates. Emily holds a bachelor's degree in journalism from California State University. Welcome to Route 51, Emily.
Thank you.
Robert Menser, USA Today Network Wisconsin. Robert is a statewide, or is the statewide living and storytelling editor for USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's worked in Wausau since 2007 and is the host of USA Network Wisconsin podcasts on youth mental health, This Is Normal. He has a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern University. Rob also appears weekly on Central Time. Welcome back to Route 51, Rob.
Hey, thanks.
And Molly Kowick of News 9. WAOW. Molly joined News 9 team in September of 2014, and she anchors News 9's Wake Up Wisconsin morning show. She holds a bachelor's degree in journalism with a concentration in broadcast journalism from Boston University. Welcome back, Molly.
All right, happy to be here.
Well, voter turnout, 59.2% in the state of Wisconsin, and here in Marathon County, as an example, 85% voter turnout. That is incredible. And Emily, I'd like to start with you, Emily Davies. What do you think motivated people this time to get out to the polls and vote?
Well, listening to other news reports and just the campaign in general, I think both parties were able to charge their parties and get people out to vote. And I think more and more people that are independent and people who maybe didn't used to go out and vote, clearly, it's decided that they want to do something, whether it's for one side or the other, or if there's a particular issue, they decided they wanted to make sure that their voices were heard and made sure that they could make an impact.
Molly.
Yeah, it sounded like, you know, after the 2016 election, whether you were excited about the outcome or you were not as excited, people felt very much that they wanted to take part in the politics of this country. And so for the past 2 years, I've been hearing a lot of excitement about voting and about being active. And so I think this was the first big election where people really felt like they could take part.
Rob?
Yeah, I mean, in a word, I think polarization, right? Mm-hmm. You know, for people who don't like Donald Trump, this was an opportunity to show how much you don't like President Trump and vote for some Democrats. For people who are big fans of Trump, that, you know, there is negative partisanship as well, and we saw that in Wisconsin as it happened. Democrats turned out in higher numbers than ever, especially in the Democratic centers in Madison and Milwaukee. But really, the sort of Trump country, including in central Wisconsin, the margins were not that much lower. People who are inclined to support the Republican Party were quite fired up to vote for to vote for their people, or to, I guess, to show support or to counter the apparent enthusiasm on the Democratic side.
Well, it's interesting. In the final days leading up to the election, if you're looking at the polls, the governor's race was extremely well, it was literally tied. It was deadlocked. It right. was at 49%.
Right.
It was incredible. But Tony Evers, Democrat Tony Evers, defeated Walker by just about 1.2 percentage points in this race. Walker conceded yesterday afternoon, and the rural counties in our state overwhelmingly favored Walker, especially in the northern and central parts, while urban areas and those with strong influence from the University of Wisconsin system and other southern parts of the state favored Evers. How do you feel the gubernatorial race reflects nationwide divisions between rural and urban voters? And what does it say about the climate politically in Wisconsin? Rob, let's start with you.
Well, so, the urban-rural divide is deepening and appears to be a durable trend. I looked at – so Marathon County is not the most not the most rural county in Wisconsin, but I looked back at the sort of vote shares for Republicans and Democrats in the last 10 years. And, Marathon County used to be a very swingy county, voted for George W. Bush and then Obama and then McCain. Romney, and so but in the last several elections, Democratic vote share has not exceeded 38% in Marathon County. It is not a swingy area anymore, and that's a sign of this sort of deepening and hardening of that polarization.
Molly.
I think this is something that you don't just see in Wisconsin either. In New York State, a lot of times people forget that there's the whole state and not just New York City. So New York City obviously typically will go more blue than red, and that is often enough to carry statewide races blue. And then you have this large part of the state that kind of feels a little bit forgotten, or like their voices aren't being heard. And I think that can sometimes be the case, because when you look at a Wisconsin map and the counties in their division, there are far, far more red counties than blue counties. But the blue counties are the ones that hold the majority of the population.
And I mean, even if you're looking at the candidates, where they traveled, Walker was coming up to this area quite often, and sometimes several different places in this area in the same day, several times in the week. And Tony Evers, he did come up here, but the frequency was not the same. And I think, I mean, we saw it with the presidential election 2 years ago. You know, the Democratic candidates were not focusing on these areas. They focused on the larger, more urban areas. And you have the same thing with, we did have candidate Trump at the time, come to this area. We had some other Republicans come to the area, and they were able to speak to those voters that maybe felt like, even if they lean Democratic, maybe they felt like their voices were being heard by the Republican Party. And maybe that's just something that's been, as you were saying, Rob, deepening in these divides.
And what happened in the state, turnout in Madison and Milwaukee was like supercharged for Democrats, and there were more Democratic votes in those population centers. And ultimately, that is what made the difference for Tony Evers and the other statewide candidates. But the other thing that happened was Republican vote shares in those. You forget this, but it's true. Republicans actually get a lot of votes from Wisconsin's major cities. And the vote share for Republicans in those places also went down. So in other words, that's polarization more than ever. The only place where there was like a signs of sort of demographic shifts at all. It was not in urban centers, and it was not in rural areas, but a little bit in the suburbs. So overall, in the heavily Republican, like Waukesha County and sort of Milwaukee Ring suburbs, Republican shares went down a bit. Republicans easily won those places, but they didn't have the same level of turnout. St. Croix County is like sort of exurban Minneapolis and the western part of the state. That's another example. It's a suburban area, and it's like a little soft for Republicans, where in rural areas it's like heavily Republican, smaller cities, Green Bay, Wausau, pretty much looked a lot like what they looked like in 2016 or 2014 even.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're when we look at the 11 counties in our viewing area, we saw the exact same split for the gubernatorial race that we saw in 2016 for the presidential race. Every single county went red, with the exception of Portage County, largely due to the influence from UWSP.
Exactly. And one of the things that also reflected on the high profile folks that came to the state this time around, President Trump came to Marathon County. Vice President Pence was up in Hudson. And then you have President Obama and Vice President Biden, Milwaukee and Madison, the same kind of thing. You know, the Democratic strongholds in the South and the Republican strongholds up here in central and northern Wisconsin. Would you comment, Molly, we'll start with you, on how those major profile visits to the state really may or may not have had an impact on the vote?
A lot of what I was hearing and seeing from people on social media is that it doesn't matter who you support. The fact that the president or the vice president is coming to this area, to what is considered a smaller community, people were very, very excited about. And I think it just is a reminder to folks here that they are not forgotten by the people who have the power right now in Washington.
Emily.
Sorry, I just not to jump in, but just but not to interrupt. I just want to get this in because at the time when Trump visited in Mosinee, there was a very widely shared Washington Post story that reported that Trump's advisors had told him that, you know, unnamed advisors had told him that it was a waste of time and he shouldn't come to Wisconsin because Scott Walker was definitely going to lose and there was nothing he could do. And that we know now that was not true. It was a good use of political capital to come to that, to make that campaign visit. Ultimately, like, you know, Scott Walker did not win Wisconsin, but for sure it was not a lost race at that point.
No, I think he charged Republican voters probably. And, you know, he even said, you know, I'm on the ballot. Think of this as me being on the ballot. And I think that's how people voted, is they voted whether it was for or against. And, you know, any kind of whether it's policies or the way he speaks or things like that, I think people decided to take on that, you know, that frame. You know, governor or not governor, President Trump is on the ballot, and that's how people voted.
Yeah, and I think you even heard a little bit of the fallout from it yesterday during his press conference when he was sort of criticizing some of the Republicans who didn't necessarily welcome in his support. He almost kind of took that as like a personal attack, as if he was up for election, even though obviously he was not.
So the governor's race is so interesting, and Scott Walker was a national figure. So it was, you know, a lot of people were focused on that. But like we should also note the U.S. Senate race, which was not close at all, which is sort of fascinating in itself, in that Tammy Baldwin, you know, there were a lot of Democratic senators who lost races in states that had gone to Trump in 2016. Wisconsin narrowly went to Trump in Wisconsin 16, but Tammy Baldwin's race was never close, and it was called within an hour of the polls closing. I don't know. I guess there are like different theories about why that is, but it seems to me if I were a Democratic strategist, that would be like someone you'd want to look at. So clearly something that she has done as a politician has worked with voters, including in some rural areas, or at least getting enough support in rural areas that the Republican couldn't really get close.
Well, you know, along with that victory, you know, as you said, it was a very large victory margin in the Senate race. But then you also have the victories of Sean Duffy and Ron Kind in their respective districts and very large margins as well. Do you see that as a look at do we trust our incumbents, or is this a nationwide trend? Emily?
I felt like it was, you know, people entrusted their incumbents. I mean, the races that were closer in Wisconsin were ones that were highly advertised. The people saw the different sides. They got a lot of attention on debates. They got a lot of attention just in general news. But these other races where the incumbents have strongholds in their areas, their opponents really didn't spend money to do advertisements, or they just didn't have the money, or they didn't have the backing from their party in terms of money. So I think in that sense, people just didn't maybe feel like they knew who those people were, or they've maybe watched one or two reports or things like that. I know I personally was covering two of those races, the Ron Kind race in the 3rd Congressional District and then the 7th Congressional District. You know, we did a piece on Steve Toft and Margaret Ingebretson, but, you know, it was much further and, you know, between than these higher publicized races.
Yeah, Margaret Ingebretson was, you know, trying to run this grassroots campaign, but I think a lot of people then didn't necessarily hear from her, whereas Sean Duffy, you heard his ads sort of all over the place, and he was very much running on personality and family values, something that, you know, a lot of people can relate to.
Well, so gerrymandering as a role too, right? I mean, if we want to talk about the people trusting incumbents, I mean, look, incumbents, yeah, have a lot of advantages. But one advantage is that they tend to have districts that were drawn in order for them to keep their jobs. You know, like it's possible to go too far with that. The truth is that the 7th Congressional District has President Trump has a positive approval rating in the 7th Congressional District. That's not true of Wisconsin as a whole. It's not true of the country as a whole, but it's true in that district. So you know, I don't want to say like it's only gerrymandering that keeps Sean Duffy or Ron Kind in office. It's partly just sort of the demographics and where we are. But like just to say, it's a little crazy that we have this giant, national elections and 435 House seats, and the entirety of that battle is fought out in like a few dozen battlegrounds. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, and there's, you know, we were kind of talking about that a little bit too the other day. A lot of these candidates that have had seats for a long time, they used to be more moderate, and now they kind of are going to one side or the other. And even the candidates that were on the ballots, a lot of them they're very polarized, just like the rest of the state, as we're finding with the voting. You stay by being on that one far side because people can, you know, they can compartmentalize in their brains, you know, saying, okay, I value these things. I'm a Republican, or I value these things. I'm a Democrat, and I'm going to trust that these people are going to accomplish those sets of goals and make it a little easier.
One of the statewide races that still has not been called officially is the Attorney General race. And although it is unofficial, in his victory speech over Republican incumbent Brad Schimmel, Democrat Josh Call pledged to be independent and an advocate for all Wisconsinites, in his words. He also said that he'd work with Governor-elect Evers to withdraw the state from the lawsuit looking to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Providing that the results are confirmed, what is your perspective on how Call will approach the office differently from Schimmel, and what changes do you see in that state policy? Rob, we'll start with you.
Well, so the Obamacare lawsuit was objectively damaging to Republicans in this election campaign. The lawsuit is like live. It exists. Wisconsin will presumably withdraw under the Evers and Call administration. They don't agree with it, but like but Wisconsin still would be subject to whatever a decision is made on that. So it was like more in some respects more symbolic that that Republican Brad Schimmel signed on to the lawsuit, which would overturn Obamacare and therefore would take away protections for pre-existing conditions and other popular aspects of the Obamacare law, as well as the unpopular aspects. So it was a bit symbolic to sign on. Similarly, it will be a bit symbolic for Wisconsin to withdraw, because like we're going to be stuck with whatever the courts decide on this. But what's not symbolic, I mean, it was an issue that that resonated with voters. We saw it in the Senate race. We saw it in the Attorney General's race. We saw it in the governor's race. Republicans were really on defense about that issue, because, you know, something like protections for pre-existing conditions is objectively politically popular. That's not true of every part of the Obamacare law. It certainly was not true when it passed years ago, but it was true in this election. That is a fact now.
Yeah, it seemed like at first a lot of the Democrats were coming out with ads and taking platforms of, you know, I will support funding for pre-existing conditions. I will support insurance companies having to protect them. But then all of a sudden, it was not just the Democrats singing that tune. It was the Republicans as well. So I think that was a real sticking point. And I think that healthcare will be something that will be a real focus for Josh Call moving forward.
Yeah, and then kind of moving around more of a general sense of that office. I mean, Call has said that he plans on focusing on environmental law, and he's also right now a private practice attorney focusing on election issues. And speaking with now retired professor Ed Miller from UW Stevens Point, he was saying that, you know, the election protections in Wisconsin need to be upgraded. They need to be changed, and that might be something that we see going forward. Should Call officially become Attorney General as well.
You're listening to the Route 51 Reporters Roundtable on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg, and our guests today are Molly Kowick of WAOW News 9, Emily Davies of WSAW News Channel 7, and Rob Menser of the USA Today Network Wisconsin. When we return, we'll discuss local referendums on marijuana and school district funding, as well as the state Senate District 29 election results. And there's room for your questions as well. What are your thoughts on the results of the election? What important issues did you want to talk about? Call us at 800-780-9742. Again, that phone number is 800-780-9742. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network. Talking with Emily Davies of News Channel 7, Molly Kowick of WAOW News 9, and Rob Menser of USA Network Wisconsin. I'm Rick Ryer on Route 51. What issues influenced your vote? How do you feel the election results reflect the state as a whole and its importance to national politics? Help us move beyond the headlines and beyond the talking points by calling 800-780-9742. Molly Kowick, in your conversations with the area residents and voters, which issues really did emerge as some of the most important ones to Wisconsin, central Wisconsin voters?
That's a good question. If I would, let me take a second. It really seemed like folks in this area were just super concerned with making sure that their voices were heard, that they were supporting the candidates that, you know, that they wanted to on the ballot. It's tough to kind of think which exact issues were really the sticking points here. I think healthcare was a big one, though, and we saw that reflected in the messages that the candidates were sending out prior to the election.
Emily Davies?
Well, I know that teachers have not been happy with Governor Scott Walker for quite a while, at least the majority of them. So education in general is for a lot of people, but there's a lot of teachers that were looking for Tony Evers, and I think that's where he got a lot of votes. And we saw that money coming in to Evers' campaign was also probably in a response. It was a lot of unions in response to Act 10. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes then as well.
Rob?
I mean, Trump. Right. We said it already. But I mean, that's the reality is that strong feelings for or against the president were one of the major drivers of people voting in the midterms.
We have a caller, John from Tomahawk, is on the line with us now. He has a question regarding rural voters and the governor's race. John, welcome to Route 51. Well, we'll try to get in touch with John in just a little bit. The election, this election, voters in 16 counties and 2 cities voted in advisory referendums for the legalization of medical and/or recreational marijuana. While advisory referendums don't require the state legislature to act, how do they reflect changing public perception of marijuana use in Wisconsin? Emily, we'll start with you.
Well, we actually have Brendan Scarborough in here, and he was at the polls on election day, and he was mentioning to me that a lot of people were coming out, and some of them even came out just to vote on that one item. So it's something that I think has been in discussion a lot in other states, obviously. So we're not the first by any means. We're kind of behind almost in that discussion. And whether or not people want it or don't, people made sure to voice their concern on that. And I think people have strong opinions whether or not they want it. And obviously in these areas, people said that they did.
Rob Messer.
Well, for one thing. So first of all, I mean, these referendums, they were focused on medicinal marijuana, and the language in the referendum was like felt quite stacking the deck. Like, if people who have debilitating, horrible pain, could they maybe possibly get some relief? But so these referendums passed by like 80%. They were very popular. I think that that in some cases they were intended as a turnout mechanism for Democrats who favor liberalized marijuana policies, and the idea was exactly as Emily was saying, that that this would catch the attention of people who are not habitual voters and would be something that might somebody who feels alienated from politics would at least say, like, yeah, like, let's get some more liberal weed laws.
I think it'll be an interesting one, too, just because, an advisory referendum just sort of obviously takes the temperature of how people are feeling about this. But when you look at Schimmel, who results are not final right now, but appears lost the race, for him, he very much viewed marijuana as a gateway drug. And so it'll be interesting to see moving forward after these advisory referendums and perhaps with a new attorney general, what the fallout from that will be.
I think we do not know yet what the fallout will be from the fact that Michigan has legalized recreational marijuana on Tuesday. Not on Tuesday, but like the process begins.
They approved it.
And there's a whole border that Wisconsin shares with the UP. That seems like that could be a big deal, and it sort of create some real political pressure for a policy that, while complicated, is in general has been politically popular in the states that that have adopted it.
And we are talking with the Attorney General, Brad Schimmel, and also, law enforcement in the area. They're saying now that the more and more states that are becoming legalizing marijuana in any capacity, that's affecting Wisconsin. It's coming in a lot more easily. And yeah, especially if it's going to be on that border, it's going to be no problem at all almost.
And there will be people, for sure. There are downsides to legalized recreational marijuana. I don't want to say that there's no complications to the to the policy, but there certainly will be people who whose view is, look, why should the UP get these tax dollars and tourism that does follow or has in the past in states that have adopted these laws. So we'll see. It's hard to predict, but there could be significant political pressure as a direct result of that.
Especially in the UP, where it's an area that a lot of times people more so identify as being part of Wisconsin than being part of Michigan. Right. Yeah.
That's a real good point. Yeah. John from Tomahawk is on the line with us. Hi, John. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning. I'm a little always caught in between. I live over in the Green Bay area, but have a cabin in northern Wisconsin. And I always see the maps and I see all the Republican support from all the rural counties. And I guess I kind of see a disconnect. And I'd like your insight on, what exactly are the rural counties seeing that the Republican Party is really doing for them? I guess I see things like, I'll drive around and I'll see sportsmen for Walker signs. And I think, if you're a sportsman, you probably are thinking, you really would want a conservation or science-based approach to DNR and wildlife management, not allow a lot of the industry and the business and economy driving things to get in the way of that, other than maybe it's gun control that they're afraid of. Nobody's going to be taking our guns if you're a Democrat, governor. I just see that internet connectivity issue has not been addressed. And if I live out in the country or try to have a cabin, I might want to be able to be in contact with my family, or an education situation where I want to take a class, or I live in the country. I just don't see that they're being addressed, but for some reason they're just vehement about being supporting the Republican Party. So sorry it's long-winded, but there's many things like that I could think of.
Thanks, John. We'll start with Molly's reaction on that.
So I think that Republican candidates in particular have done a really strong job of making sure that they are pushing a platform in which they're reminding the rural communities that they're not forgotten, that they are, that the Republican candidates are fighting for them. And so I think that a lot of times when Republicans are going to the polls and stuff, they're seeing that, they're remembering the ads in which they're highlighting farming, the ads in which they're highlighting certain different accesses for rural communities. And that's what they're remembering as they're voting.
Emily.
Yeah. I lost my train of thought. Maybe Rob, go first. And I have one.
John makes an interesting point, and one thing that it makes me think of is the tariffs issue, right? Sort of free trade issue that President Trump enacting tariffs had direct negative impacts on. Local Wisconsin farmers, dairy farms, and ginseng farms in Marathon County directly deal with the fallout from increased tariffs, and it doesn't seem to have made any difference at all. So it's an interesting question. I think that that a part of the answer has to be sort of just cultural identity. There are questions about racial anxieties, racism that may play into, certainly did play into some Republican appeals in the campaign, but there's not like a lot of evidence that worked a lot in Wisconsin specifically, in the way that there is evidence in some other parts of the country. So it's a bit of a question, but there's a cultural identity that is durable and that does not seem to be like directly related to policy effects.
Well, I think looking at the campaigns too, I mean, you had ads on behalf of Walker who were saying, the farm, tax credits are going to be gone if you're going to vote for Evers, or, there's people who are saying, or, the Republicans are touting that, hey, we gave you a bunch of tax credits, and if you vote for Democrats, then those tax credits are going to go. You're going to have less money in your pocket, and that money is going to go to urban areas. So I think that's part of the polarization, and then maybe the reason why more rural areas are drawn to Republicans, because they feel like the money is going to be taken away from those areas. But then speaking with, Tammy Baldwin, that was actually the tariffs was what I focused on with that race. And, Tammy was talking about how she was going to bring certain things to the farm bill and how she's not necessarily against tariffs, but, she didn't approve of how Trump necessarily handled them. And then Leah, she just didn't seem like she was very educated on the topic. She just kind of agreed with what was just going on, but wasn't able to really speak to what those issues were. So it was kind of interesting. There is that balance and kind of what John mentioned. But overall, I think it's something that the Democrats are going to take my money away from rural areas. And I think that's something that's very strong. And it's been the conversation for a long time.
What are your perspectives, for example, the Foxconn situation? That was brought up not only just in Racine County and in Milwaukee County, but that issue was discussed everywhere in Wisconsin. How much of an effect do you think that happened, that had on the polls, not the polls, but the vote that we just had?
Foxconn, this is an interesting question. I think it requires some more study than we probably have now. But what I found interesting, so Foxconn was underwater in terms of Wisconsin public opinion right up until the last days. In the last Marquette poll, Wisconsin said they approved of the Foxconn deal by like a point. So whatever. So polarization, right? But what I think. It seems to me a question whether it turned out to be much of a factor. It was for such an enormous expenditure by the state and such a controversial set of incentives for the state. It certainly, like, you know, whatever, 1 year ago felt like it was going to be the big central question. And I think it kind of wasn't. I don't know, it would require more study. But I think as it turned out, it was, we're talking about pre-existing conditions a lot more, talking about other issues more.
I think the only time that I really heard Foxconn come up a lot in the election was Democrats using Foxconn to say Scott Walker cared so much about this that he didn't care about the roads. And that was not
roads. How could we forget roads?
Right,
that was
of course,
huge.
Of course. And that's really where I heard it come up in this election. But I think there were so many other issues that trumped the Foxconn debate.
I think also, though, I did hear, and I can't remember who I was talking with, but there's small business owners that I think maybe were influenced by that potentially, that there was a discussion about, you know, if that much incentives would have been put into, you know, small businesses here in Wisconsin, the impact that could have had on several different businesses to grow. And so I don't know if that was a factor at all. But I know that Foxconn, it's been a complicated thing. And also just with the incentives already in place, how much change can you have on that package?
That's true. Yeah, right. I mean, it seems unlikely that Governor Evers will be able to completely rescind this stuff. Although maybe who knows? We'll see what happens. But yeah, I guess what we can say for sure is that it's not clear that it cut heavily in one direction or the other in the end. That's the way it looks in it right now.
According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin taxpayers were asked to commit more than $1 billion. In additional funding for public schools in this election. At the same time, Governor Walker campaigned on his 2017-19 budget increases to state aid, including $636 million and supporting legislation increasing pupil sparsity aid in low-populated districts. Consistent with state Senate trends, District 29's Republican incumbent Jerry Petrosky held his seat against Democrat challenger Richard Poulter. What does this tell us about Wisconsin's priorities at the local level and their thoughts about public education spending? Rob.
You know, so when Republicans took control of, levers of power in Wisconsin after the 2010 elections, it was part of the Act 10 package to make it the idea was to make it harder for local schools to raise property taxes on local taxpayers. And so the limit of the tax increases that they were allowed to do was lowered. And if they wanted to go above that limit, they needed to go to referendum. But then what has happened in practice, what has happened in the last 8 years is that they just go to referendum and then the people vote in favor of the referendum. Mostly people favor these things, and it's actually rare for one to be defeated, and that goes for Democratic areas and Republican areas and urban areas and rural areas. And so I think whatever else is a legacy of the Walker administration, that does not seem to have worked out the way that that the policy was intended. And it definitely undercuts some of the state level tax cuts because you pay, you know, it ends up you make it up in the local taxes.
When we look at the school referendums from our area, I believe all but one passed. And I think that is because no matter which party you are on, people in general, I think, do like to support education if they can. Everybody, most people have children. Most people went to school and have somehow benefited from that system.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I would agree.
We're talking with Molly Kowiek of News 9 WAOW, Rob Menser of USA Today Network Wisconsin, and Emily Davies of WSAW News Channel 7. I'm Rick Ryer. We'll be back right after this. Mm-hmm. We're back. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, we are discussing the November 6th midterm election results with local reporters Emily Davies of WSAW News Channel 7, Molly Kowick of WAOW News 9, and Robert Mentzer of USA Today Network Wisconsin. 800-780-9742 is the number for you to join us and share your thoughts on the election and what issues were important to you as you went to the polls. We'll continue to take as many calls as we can during the time we have left. 800-780-9742. Let's turn a bit to the state assembly district races. Despite Democrat victories in the gubernatorial and U.S. Senate races, Republicans held on to majorities in both houses of the state legislature. Incumbents Scott Krug, Patrick Snyder, and John Spiros all were victorious in their election this time around. What local issues most influenced these results? Molly, we'll start with you.
I think, again, this was one where you saw people voting for their party. As Rob mentioned before, a lot of people were empowered to come out either for or against Trump. And I think that was reflected in the local races as well.
I think it's also exposure. Again, like the larger races, which generally are getting people out to the polls in the first place, the federal races and the governor's race, people are paying attention to those races. And then these other races, you know, while it might be seeing that, hey, these guys are doing a good job, we like what they're doing, we're going to vote them back in, it might just be in another incumbency thing where they are just happy with what they're doing. It doesn't look like they're doing anything bad, so we'll keep them in.
Rob?
Well, I mean, I don't want to say it's all gerrymandering. It's not all gerrymandering, but just I just want to let's not let it pass. With Wisconsin's state level district maps are heavily gerrymandered. This is a fact. So, in general, assembly candidates they're the prisoners of their party's fortune, and that was the case in a lot of these districts. Because people are busy, it's hard to follow, and so you sort of know, do you kind of agree with the Republicans or kind of agree with the Democrats? I will say, Representative Pat Snyder in the Marathon County, Wausau area, made a point of identifying himself with some of his bills were like around the opiate epidemic and
foster care.
He made a point of being seen as a moderate Republican member. And what he was, look, I mean, he was a moderate Republican member in the assembly. And I think that was, partly sincere and comes from where he comes from, but it's partly like political strategy too. And as it turned out, his race was not close at all.
Yeah. And all three of those members also have passed legislation. So they can be seen then as productive assembly people or senators. So I think that has a factor as well.
You know what else? It also relates to the lack of competitive congressional races in the third and seventh districts, right? So people don't really know. There's not like a high profile challenge, and so you kind of there's like less chance for a coattail effect, maybe, or less people are fired up, and so you get what you get. You get incumbents.
What surprised you most about the election, Emily?
The attorney general's race, I really didn't know what way that would go, how tight that would be. Especially with Brad Schimmel being the incumbent, he's got a lot of endorsements from law enforcement, which I think a lot of people look to when they're, at least with that role, they're looking, okay, hey, the law enforcement people like that. He's our chief law enforcement officer. I was surprised that it was so tight. And just where that went, and the referendum. I mean, the referendums, there wasn't really any problems with those at all. They pretty much just overwhelmingly passed.
Molly.
I thought it was a pleasant surprise seeing how positive people were. I think when you look back to the 2016 election, there was so much, it seemed like, negativity bringing people out to vote, whereas this time it almost seemed like voting is suddenly cool again. Voting is in. It's a great thing to be doing. It's a positive thing, no matter how old or young you are or what candidates you support. And so I think that was a really cool change to see, and a nice surprise to see a difference from 2016.
Voting is cool. I agree. I agree with that. That makes me like one of the coolest guys. To be honest, the thing that surprised me the most in this election was how little changed from 2016. I mean, really, Wisconsin, the shape, the look, the vote shares in Wisconsin were just very, very similar to 2016, which is crazy. You feel like, well, a lot of stuff has happened in that time, but as it turns out, people's habits and preferences are just very fixed. They know what they think about this guy Trump, and the only change was more enthusiasm in the Democratic areas. That was really it.
And it's kind of like you have to choose one thing. You can't be both. You have to like one thing and not the other, be for and against at the same time. And yeah, that could totally influence that.
I mean, obviously, we just saw a change in the governor's seat. But it's not like there was this massive change in perception statewide, because that race was fairly close, came down to what, roughly 30,000 votes.
Super close.
Yeah. and so there's not, while the party for the seat has changed, there hasn't been this huge change or this huge shift in what people want in the state.
Anything else, Rob?
I immediately start thinking about the next thing. So like I find it really interesting to think about how Wisconsin, after quite a long time of one party rule by Republicans, what it will actually look like with a strongly Republican legislature and a Democratic governor. I don't know if we're going to see any like weird coalitions or odd cross-party moves, or if we're just headed for like total gridlock.
Well, potential.
I'd like to know.
Potential gridlock. Assembly Speaker Voss has come out to say that perhaps we've given the governor too much authority. Maybe we should take some back. That was in yesterday's at the state capitol. Molly, what are your thoughts on that briefly?
I mean, I really think that this is going to be very, very interesting to watch kind of how Wisconsin shakes out over the next 2 years or so. Is Wisconsin going to focus on Wisconsin, or are we going to focus on 2020?
Emily.
I think it was kind of expected. We're kind of in a place in politics where it's power plays. So you would expect to have them say, yep, we're going to make sure that you're not going to be able to do anything. but there are different little rules in Wisconsin's government that will be interesting little kind of battlegrounds when it comes to budgetary policies and the vetoes.
If I had to guess what that was about, I think Republicans must be nervous about having a Democrat in charge of the Department of Natural Resources. That's that's an area where there are divergent political views. It's an area where the governor can do things without legislation. And I would that's a battleground. That's a battleground coming up, I think.
And that's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank our guests on Route 51, Emily Davies, Molly Kowiek, and Robert Menser for joining us in the studio. Joy Ratch-Kramer produced today's program. She also provided on-air production. John Altenberg composed the Route 51 theme. I'm Rick Ryer, in for Glenn Moberg. Be sure to stay tuned for more continuing coverage of the 2018 midterm elections on Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week, we turn away from politics and preview the upcoming gun deer season with the Outdoor Guys on WPR's The West Side with Rich Kramer. Until then, we're heading out of town.